All right, so we have been looking at the doctrine of the image of God in the pages of Genesis, and we have been seeking to understand just more fully what it means that we are image bearers, what that means for our identity, what that means for our belonging and value, and what that means for our purpose in this world as followers of Jesus. And so this morning, we're going to be looking at Sabbath and specifically the rest that Sabbath observance offers us. So let's do this. Let's stand for the reading of God's word, and then we'll get into our teaching. Genesis chapter 1, starting in verse 26. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food, and to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds in the sky and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work that he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. This is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created, when the Lord God made the earth and the heavens. This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated. So 2 weeks ago, we looked together at how our vocation, our calling, is directly tied to our being image bearers of God. Our God who is creator, the God who works, the God who brings order out of chaos, who forms and fills the earth to be his dwelling place. But it cannot be missed that the God who works also rests. And so we want to consider what it means that God rested on the seventh day, and as those who bear his image, what does that rest, or what should that rest look like for us? Now, I think to begin even talking about Sabbath, we first have to acknowledge that as Christians, Protestant evangelicals, we tend to actually reject Sabbath observance. And I think we do so based on a misunderstanding of Jesus' own practice. So many of the confrontations that we see Jesus in with the religious leaders of the day have to do with Sabbath observance, right? And Jesus is healing people on the Sabbath. He's doing all sorts of things that keep getting him in trouble on the Sabbath. And many take Jesus' actions as him rejecting or opposing Sabbath. And many well-meaning Christians note, well, Jesus didn't keep Sabbath, and the New Testament never explicitly teaches Sabbath observance, and actually says that we don't have to observe new moons or Sabbath or these feasts and these types of things. But I think we need to just recognize Jesus is not anti-Sabbath, but is clearly showing a misinterpretation and abuse of it. Jesus' point is actually to correct Sabbath observance and not to set it aside. In Mark chapter 2, verses 27, again, Jesus is talking to the religious leaders. They are finding fault with him for healing on the Sabbath. And Jesus reminds them, he says this, "The Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people, and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath." Sadly, the religious leaders of Jesus' day had turned the Sabbath into this just drab of a day. Just this big bummer, right? That everybody had to observe. And it was like this weight of guilt and just heaviness that laid on the people. And when Jesus was doing things like restoring life and healing, the religious leaders are finding fault with him. And he's like, are you kidding me? Do you not understand what Sabbath is actually about? It's about rest. It's about healing. It's about wholeness. The Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people and not people to meet the needs or requirements of the Sabbath. Now, we understand Christians are clearly not obligated to keep Mosaic covenant law. Right, this is something that we firmly believe, that Jesus has actually fulfilled the requirements of the law for us, and now we are underneath the law of Christ. And Paul tells us that the law of Christ is this law of love, to love our neighbor as ourself, to bear the burdens of one another. And this is kind of this guiding principle and value for the people of God. What shows love to God? What shows love to my neighbor? That is the law that we live under. So, does that mean then, excuse me, that we are free from keeping the Sabbath? And I love questions like this because I think I always want to ask, well, what do we mean by being free? Are we free from keeping the Sabbath? I think that we need to consider that the Sabbath shows up long before the Mosaic Law. Now remember that the Mosaic Law is the law for God's society, for his people. He's showing them the way it works best. And even Paul says the whole law can actually be summarized in this, love your neighbor as yourself. But they're the guidelines for the people of God living at that time. Now, Sabbath, as I mentioned, it shows up long before this law though. It shows up in the beginning. In the creation account, before the fall, so before all the brokenness comes into the world, before sin, before the need for the law or law keeping. So, having said that, the subject of Sabbath keeping is actually deeper than a question of being free from the law of Moses or not, and seems to speak more about human well-being and a way of life rather than simply religious observance or a day off for the Jewish people. And what if by Christians rejecting Sabbath keeping, we are actually cutting ourselves off from part of what it means to be human? That God has actually created us to rest. And what if by not resting, we are cutting off part of what it means to be made in the image of the God who rests on the seventh day? So these are some of the things that we want to consider this morning. What Sabbath is, what its purpose is, why we need it, and how we can actually observe it well. So there's going to be a handful of passages that we're going to consider together. We're going to move through this part pretty quickly, and if I do my job well, the whole sermon pretty quickly. We'll see, right? It's a gamble. So we're going to look at Genesis chapter 2. We're going to look at some passages in Exodus. We're going to consider Deuteronomy, Matthew chapter 11, and finally Hebrews 4. So first, as we just read from Genesis chapter 2, this is the first mention of Sabbath. Let's read it again together. It says, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done." Now, considering the image of God, which is what we're doing in this series, we cannot miss that the Genesis creation narrative begins with God creating, working, and ends with him resting. That in these 6 days, God is forming and fashioning the cosmos to be this beautiful dwelling place. And that he himself inhabits this dwelling place. We've talked about this in the weeks past, but remember, there's mention of God walking with the man and the woman in the garden in the cool of the day. God joins in the cosmos and inhabits his creation. The final stanza of this creation narrative introduces us to the ultimate climax of the creation narrative, which is the Sabbath day. And this day communicates that the cosmos is finished. The work of creation is done. The Creator is pleased with his work. Remember, the sixth day, the final day of creation, gets this double blessing. It is good, good. And as an expression of God's pleasure, of his delight in his work, he rests. Now, the idea here is not just that God is ceasing from his creative work, but of him taking up residence in his creation, sitting and resting on his throne over the cosmos. In the ancient Near East, this description of resting was often used of kings or queens who would be enthroned over a kingdom. And the idea was that now they are sitting on their throne, ruling over the creation. And it's kind of this capstone, right? Like everything has been ordered and put in its right place. And then God himself sits on the throne of his creation and is in fellowship or communion with his creation. Now, I have made the mistake of focusing my attention on the work of God in creation, and I've highlighted the creation of humanity as the pinnacle of God's creative work. And I do believe it is the pinnacle of God's creative work, but I've come to see that the pinnacle of the narrative is actually the Sabbath on the seventh day. It is the capstone or the completion of God's work, where God has created all that has been made. He has set his image bearers over his creation. Everything is in its right place, and now God himself inhabits, meets with, and communes with his creation. This is a beautiful picture. Now, this comes from a theologian named Wayne Mueller. He's written extensively on the Sabbath. He says this: the ancient rabbis taught that on the seventh day, God created rest, which is tranquility, serenity, peace, and repose. Rest in the deepest possible sense of fertile, healing stillness. Until the Sabbath, the creation was unfinished. Only after the birth of rest, only with tranquility and rest, was the circle of creation made full and complete. I love that idea of the circle of creation being full and complete. That almost like rest is this water that just seeps into the cracks and just fills up all kind of the gaps in creation. And now it is filled to its fullest. I think it's also fascinating to note that though all of the creation is said to be good, it is only the seventh day that is made holy by God. And in fact, it's the only thing in all of the creation narrative said to be sanctified. So think about this. God, on the seventh day, he makes time holy. He says, this day, this is special space and time. It isn't like the other days. It is holy, set apart, unique, different. Now, I believe if we take what is seen here in Genesis 2 as a principle, it would seem that Sabbath rest isn't just about not working, but is about finding contentment in life and enjoying the work that we have cultivated and accomplished. I picture God, it's like he's just created everything. it is good. It is very good. And then God, to show his delight, sits and rests and just takes in the beautiful scene that he has just created, almost like an artist stepping back from their canvas just to take in this beautiful work that they have created. Here, the Creator sits on his throne and takes deep delight in all that he has made. So also, in Sabbath, God invites you and I to join him, to rest from our labors and to enjoy the works of our hands. The beautiful world that he created, to savor it, to take it in, to delight in both creation and creator. I imagine that every one of us in this room has had that sentiment where we feel like our life is just passing us by. We're celebrating Mother's Day today. And so even just with our own children, right? We always say the thing, oh my gosh, like you blink and they're graduating high school. You know, I just feel like it goes by so fast, right? How many of us, we experience that, right? Oh my gosh, it's gone by so fast. Part of this idea of resting is that we actually set time aside to enjoy our lives. That parents, we intentionally set time aside where we're not instructing, where we're not growing, where we're not learning, but we're actually just enjoying our family. Or those of us who don't have family, maybe we are dedicated to our career, to our community, that we actually take time aside and we've worked so hard. Are we taking time to delight in what we've created? To be proud of the work that we've created and to enjoy the labor of it, to share in the benefits of that creation. You ever have that experience like where it really, your joy really isn't complete until somebody shares in it? It's like every time you eat dessert, right? You gotta try this. You have to, like, I'm telling you, it's like no chocolate gelato you've ever had before. And you're like anxious until they try it and then they do and you're like, see, I told you. Right? I want us to think of Sabbath in that way, in the way that we experience it, but also in the way that we invite others to experience it as well. We have worked, and God wants us to actually enjoy the fruit of our labor, the work of our hands. The way that it came to me this week is to rest from our labors, to enjoy the work of our hands, the beautiful world that he created, to savor it, to take it in like a deep breath, to delight in both creation and creator. This is some of the principle that we can pull from this picture of Sabbath, even from the very beginning. Now, the next time mention of Sabbath shows up in the biblical narrative, it's in Exodus 16, and it's in the giving of manna. Remember, God provided food for his people in the wilderness. There was no ground to till, and you know the resources were scarce, and so God feeds them with this bread of heaven. But he intentionally only gives it for 6 days because he wants his people to rest. So on the seventh day, there will be no manna. They're supposed to keep what they had on the sixth day, and it will sustain them so that they can rest, that they can rest in the Lord and rest with their families. And then again, the instruction of all of this comes in Exodus 20 with the giving of the Ten Commandments. And as I said, the Ten Commandments, remember, are God's basic instruction for his society. So the Sabbath command and instruction found in these passages was a legislated, merciful day of rest from Yahweh. We have to remember that this is so unique in the ancient world. I remember a couple years ago, I was talking to somebody and they were asking me why Christians chose to, you know, gather on Sundays. And they're like, do you think it's because it was the weekend and everybody had it off? I said, no, that was a slave culture they lived in and there was no time off. You know, they gathered in the evenings because they worked during the day. So, you know, the weekend is actually a gift given to us by Sabbath observance. Right? So Think about how unique this would have been in the ancient world, that there were a people, a small group of people that actually rested while everyone around them ran ragged in concern and anxiety and toil. There was this community of people that rested. And they rested from the greatest of them to the least of them, even down to their animals, letting them rest. This was a legislated, merciful day of rest from Yahweh, a gift of mercy to the people of God. Now listen to what it says, Exodus 20, remember the Sabbath day. That means observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, set apart, different. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servants, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So Moses, again, brings back the model, the pattern for us to observe is the way of the Lord, the way of Yahweh. This is how Yahweh does his calendar, right? So this is how the people of God are going to do their calendar. 6 days, work, toil, labor, do the thing. But then on the seventh day, we rest. And this is based off the pattern of Yahweh. Something that I just love about this, and I know I mentioned a moment ago, but just how God is so specific. Like, it's not just about the patriarch who gets the day off, right? Or mom and dad get the day off, and then the kids do everything else, right? It's like he goes through, and we'll see in the next passage too. It's like just, it's you, it's your children, it's your male or female slaves, it's even the foreigner in your midst, somebody who's not a part of your community. They also get the day off. Oh, also animals. And it's just so interesting how I was mentioning this in first gathering, but how God's care for animals just like shows up so randomly in the biblical narrative. You guys remember the story of Jonah? And Jonah, he's ticked off. He wants the Ninevites just to be completely destroyed. I mean, they're pretty wicked people. And so he's mad when God shows mercy to them because they've all turned from their evil ways. And God's like, shouldn't I have mercy on these people? They don't know their right hand from their left hand. And also, there's a lot of animals in this city. And then the book ends. Like, God cares a lot about animals. This is incredible. Anyway, just, I guess that one's for me. I love it. Now, this command, as I said, is about aligning our rhythm with God's rhythm, our pattern with his pattern. It's about observing his way and being formed like him in righteousness and justice, from the least to the greatest, poorest to the richest, all the way down to the animals, that we would enact God's righteousness, his justice, his love, and his mercy. This is apprenticeship language. This is discipleship language. They are to learn the way of the Lord and follow his pattern of life. Now, the third time Sabbath observance shows up in the narrative is when Moses reintroduces the Sabbath to the generation, the new upcoming generation. They've gone through the judgment in the wilderness, 40 years of wandering, and it's a new generation that are entering into the promised land. And so in Deuteronomy, which means second, it's the second law. Moses is reintroducing the law to the people of God. And here it is fascinating because Moses says all the same things he said before, but then he adds this bit and ties Sabbath directly to their freedom from slavery in Egypt. Read this with me. Deuteronomy 5, observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, your male or female servant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, getting into the details here, right? Nor any of your animals, by the way, or any foreigner residing in your towns, so that even your male and female servants may rest. Remember, you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. So again, Moses goes through the normal list. It's the pattern. It's how God formed everything. We're to observe this. But then he adds this piece, kind of like, this is an act of resistance. Anybody pick up on that? You are to live out your freedom. You are slaves, and the Lord your God set you free. Be free, people. And so here, Sabbath observance is an act of resistance, and it's an act of subversion. It's like a weekly physical declaration, a reminder to ourselves and to those around us, we are more than the products that we produce. We are more than our work. It is a declaration against the tyranny of work. It says to ourselves, to our family, to our friends, to our neighbor, we are not slaves. We are partners with God. This is radically unique in the ancient world, even as it is today, that we have been given such incredible dignity and status by our God. And that God wanted his people to live out their freedom and then even to extend it to the lowliest and the least in their community. That this is the way that they were to live. They were to observe, to remember their slavery and their salvation. So rehearsing their story, their identity by resting on the Sabbath. When we come to the New Testament, as I mentioned, we've got these stories of Jesus where he is restoring the heart of Sabbath and what God intended for the people, right? The Sabbath was created for people, not the other way around. And so Jesus is correcting these things. But have we ever thought about Matthew chapter 11 in the context of Sabbath rest? Listen to this. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. When we come to the pages of the New Testament, we see that true Sabbath rest is not just a time and a place, but it is the Lord himself. It is resting in Jesus, the Lord of the Sabbath, finding rest, being with him, and learning from his way that brings whole person rest and renewal to human beings. And so even here, this language of apprenticeship, of discipleship, come to me, learn from me, take my yoke. This is a way that rabbis would talk about their teachings. Take my yoke upon you, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and the result, you will find rest. Jesus is calling us back to this Genesis ideal of apprenticeship, of discipleship to Yahweh, to learn his way of being, finding deep soul satisfaction and rest in our loving Creator. And then one more passage. There is this strange passage in the book of Hebrews. And the writer there, I mean, he's just doing so much with this passage. And, you know, if we were doing a gathering class, we would be able to kind of delve into this. Maybe we will. There's an idea for a gathering class. But just getting into all of these ways in which Israel rejected God's offer of rest, God's offer of security and blessedness that he had. And so he's warning this group of Christians that they are still in danger, like Israel, of missing out on the rest that God has for his people. And he writes this, there remains then a Sabbath rest. It's still present and available, he's saying, for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from his. Let us, therefore, make every effort to enter that rest, so that no one will perish by following the people of God in the past, example of disobedience. To me, what I understand the writer of Hebrews to be saying here is that the heart of Sabbath is this kingdom anticipation. From the beginning, Sabbath was pointing to fullness. Remember, we talked about this capstone, talked about this water seeping into every crack and filling it up and making everything whole. It was pointing to this telos, the purpose and fulfillment of all of creation. God with his people, the people with God, enjoying his wonderful creation together, delighting in all that God had made. That the peace of God, which is the Hebrew way of just saying everything in its right place. God is king, us under his teaching and care, ruling over and enjoying the wonderful creation that he created for us. That is what Sabbath is about. And guess what? It's coming. There is a day when God will fill all things up. He will make all things new. The end of the story of Scripture says, and now the dwelling place of God is with people. He shall be their God, and we shall be his people. There will be a new heavens and a new earth, and we will reign on the earth. That Sabbath, that rest, that completion, that fullness is yet to come. And it is made available for us by the Lord of rest, by the Lord of the Sabbath, who accomplished the work there on the cross. And now he has rested from that work. He is seated on his throne, and he is waiting for that day of completion. And so in our observance of Sabbath, we anticipate the new creation. It's a day for us to stop and recognize all that is sad and broken will become untrue. All things will be made new. Everything will be put in its right place. And it's a time for us now to sanctify time, to set it aside, to just revel in that truth. God will make all things new. He will heal everything that is broken. He will restore us. And Sabbath is a way that we can anticipate the good that is promised, the good that is to come. Now, if we take kind of all of these things together, and this is not in order, I probably could have been better at that with my notes, but Sabbath is sanctified time. And it's a disposition of our hearts when we set aside our weekday concerns, our weekly labors, and we devote ourselves to rest and spiritual enrichment with Jesus, the Lord of the Sabbath. Sabbath is an act of resistance against our consumeristic, product-producing, discontented culture. We say on this day, we are more than our work. We say with our physical bodies, we are more than producers. We say we are image bearers, meant to enjoy our Creator and meant to enjoy the work of our hands. Sabbath is to practice whole person rest, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. A time to set aside just to remember God, his nature, his presence, his character, his power, but also his provision and blessing. Sabbath is a day to be renewed. We feast, we rest, we worship, and we play. Remember, going back to that idea, how often are we setting time aside just to enjoy the things that we built? The people that we've invested time, our money, and resources in? Are we savoring the gift of our lives? God has gifted us Sabbath in order to do that. So I want to come back to this question. Are we free when we don't observe Sabbath? It depends on what you mean by freedom. And I would say, as a society, as a culture, no, we are not more free by not observing Sabbath. We are actually slaves to our labors. We have lost our identity. We think our only value is based upon what we produce, what we make, what we contribute. And we forget that we are children of God. We forget that we were made for God, that we're made for His fellowship, we're made for His friendship, we're made for one another, to enjoy one another. And our lives are passing us by. And here is this incredible gift. Jesus says, come aside for a while. Rest. Enjoy the labor of your hands. Enjoy my presence. Sabbath is basically a practice anticipation of that. And it's supposed to last a whole day. I don't know when the last time anybody did this was. Like, anybody in the room ever rest for like 24 hours, actually? Like, day off? Yeah, I took three hours off. You know? But I gotta get back to the thing, right? We'll talk about that in a minute. But Sabbath begins at sunset, going into night, and then the next day, following the pattern of creation, evening and morning. I mean, even just as a little tidbit, in the observance of Sabbath, we are actually saying we are creatures, and we are actually part of a created order. God set all of these things in place. And actually, guys, when we observe that, we find deep fulfillment. When we do what we were created to do, there's deep satisfaction, there's deep soulful rest and meaning and purpose to that. Now, why do we need Sabbath? Well, I think you know why so far. But we need the healing rest of Sabbath. And many Christians for too long have objected to Sabbath observance solely on the reason of legalism. Well, we're not obligated to keep the Sabbath. But if you ever stop to realize that Sabbath shows up in the beginning, before sin, before law-keeping, law-breaking, right? So what does it mean that we bear the image of God who both works and rests? And if the Creator rests from His work, how much more creatures who are finite and limited? Also, when it comes to Sabbath command, just think about this. What other of the Ten Commandments do we say, that one doesn't matter? And we don't call them the Nine Commandments, but somehow we say, like, oh, it's the 10 minus 1 is basically what we're saying. And I don't know if it's because we don't see how it matters morally or how it fits in with all the others. But all you have to do is walk into Barnes & Noble, browse Amazon, go into Target. You know Target has a record section, anybody? They've got some pretty good vinyl. They also have a book section. It's next to the video games and all that other stuff, right? But you just walk into any one of these places and you will find an endless amount of books written on the subject of rest, holistic health, stress, anxiety, burnout, right? We all know it. We're all experiencing it. And what we do is we buy more books to read on it, more to-do lists. We listen to more podcasts on it so we can be really, really, really well-educated, right? It's like prayer series. Like, we want to know everything about prayer so we don't have to do it. Teach me all the things about prayer so that I don't have to practice it, right? To rest is part of what it means to be human. And God has been telling human beings from the very beginning. And our human hearts just endlessly search for rest, for information on rest, for technique to rest,
but only Jesus, our creator, our maker, the Lord of rest, can actually give us the rest that we long for. He alone. Years ago, I remember I was reading and studying the Gospel of Mark, and I found it so fascinating that Jesus' most powerful works of healing and restoration were actually performed on the Sabbath. And I just thought, man, I feel like the Spirit of God is actually speaking through these scriptures, trying to communicate to us that the Sabbath is a time for deep healing in the presence of the Lord, both physically and spiritually as we commune with Him, a time to restore both body and soul in anticipation of the day when God will make all things new and heal our broken and tattered bodies forever. We need rest. We also need the counterformation to the image and purposes of God that Sabbath produces. Now, many neglect to rest or do not have the opportunity to rest simply because of the pattern that we have set for our lives, right? And with our world, our culture, our economy, right, just the advancements in technology, there is just so much to do, to observe, to busy ourselves with, even outside of work, but specifically, just talk about work for a minute, right? In 2014, I remember this article, The Economist reported that 60% of people who use their smartphones are connected to their offices for 13 and a half hours a day. I was in 2014. I don't even remember what smartphones were like back then. I mean, just imagine now what our phones do. Since COVID and the shelter in place, many of us now work from home and we think, oh my gosh, this is amazing. No, it's not. No, it's not. There is no line between your personal life and your work life. You are doing your personal life and your work. Now, if you are a disciplined person who can actually say no to your employer and prefer your health or the health of your family or these things, that's different. But we see this as this gift, but it really is not. We're actually chained to our work even more than before. For the people of God, we have to practice counterformation. Our work tells us this is our value. This is who we are. This is why we're worthwhile. This is why we're great, because of the products that we produce, because of what we contribute. And Scripture says, no, 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 no. You are of value because you have been created in the image of God. You have been made for Him, for His friendship, for His love, for His partnership, to cultivate a beautiful garden for your life and to enjoy it. We need the counterformation that comes through Sabbath observance. And so just a few questions, but I wonder when the last time was that we were turning off our phones for a few hours besides going on the airplane, right? So turn your phone to airplane mode, right? But now they have Wi-Fi and you can just get on anyway and shop and do whatever. But when's the last time that we were just able to disconnect from work, from an agenda, from distraction, and just be, and just enjoy our lives? Just take it in. Spend time in our yard. Enjoy the sounds of nature. Go on a walk just to process life. Talk to our spouse, our children, or a dear friend, to talk with Jesus. When was the last time you were just able to sit and read for the pleasure of it? Now, I'm a reader, so for me, that's like the be-all, end-all. If I could just read for pleasure. But when was the time that you just intentionally or even defiantly did some act like, I'm just going to sit here, and I'm just going to take in this moment? I've told you guys about this thing that I do sometimes. I go home and I listen to this Miles Davis song. And I just sit silently on my couch. It's called It Never Entered My Mind. And this is just this thing that just brings such deep joy and gratitude and, I don't know, just like a deep satisfaction to my life, just hearing Miles Davis blurt out these notes. And I just sit there and I just take it in. And for me, it's just this like beautiful recalibrating act. I am receiving this gift of music that God has given to humans, and I am breathing out praise to God. And it's unhurried. I probably listened to it 3 or 4 times. Nowhere to go, nowhere to be, just to sit, me, Miles, and Jesus, right? But when's the last time we just did something like that? Just sat and took in the view. Stop to ponder. To show, to observe, and remember that you are not a slave to your work. You are not a slave to our consumeristic, slavish culture. Sabbath observance is a regular practice of that truth. Now, a day off for us is usually spent either wearing ourselves out in pleasure or to catch up on errands, right? Things around the house, yard work, binge watch the latest series. But are we giving time for reflection, contemplation, focused gratitude? Are we simply enjoying the fruit of our labors? This is why we need Sabbath. Again, when we set time aside to stop, to make time sacred and holy, to consider God, his provision and blessings, who he has made us to be, to consider and enjoy the fruits of our labors, this is transformative to our person. You know, how we treat our bodies that have been made in the image of God matters deeply. How we live within the creation matters deeply. How we see ourselves matters greatly. According to Scripture, we are not created as slaves, made to do God's work, but we were created in his image to have joyful fellowship and friendship with him. And that matters for what it means to be human. How we live that truth has radical ramifications for our identity, for our value and purpose, but also radical ramifications for how we live in society. I love what Walter Brueggemann said about this in his book, Sabbath as Resistance. Listen to this. He says, in our own contemporary context of the rat race of anxiety, the celebration of Sabbath is an act of both resistance and alternative. It is resistance because it is a visible insistence that our lives are not defined by the production and consumption of commodity goods. Such an act of resistance requires enormous intentionality and communal reinforcement amid the barrage of seductive pressures from the insatiable insistence of the marketplace, with its intrusion into every part of our life, from the family to the national budget. This is just the water we're swimming in, right? He says, but Sabbath is not only resistance, it is alternative. It is an alternative to the demanding, chattering, pervasive presence of advertising and its great liturgical claim of professional sports that devours all of our rest time. The alternative on offer is the awareness and practice of the claim that we are situated on the receiving end of the gifts of God. Basically, he's saying this is the way that we resist being formed in the image of the world, in the image of culture, and that we are counterformed to the image and the ways of God. We need Sabbath. Now, let me just say this, and then we'll just talk for a few minutes about how we observe Sabbath well. Sabbath is a physical, practical way that we're just saying this. I'm not a slave. I am a recipient of grace. Everything from God is a gift. He sustains my life. He has given me the job that I have, the gifts and abilities that I have to do that job. Everything is grace, and I'm a recipient of that. Number three, my health and healing and wholeness matter, and they matter to God. They should matter to me. Fourthly, I was made to enjoy life. Church, God made the world for us. God made the world for you to enjoy it. Creation and creator. Are we doing that? Lastly, it's a physical, practical way we say, I am more than the products I produce. My family, my employees, my neighbor is more than the products and work that they produce. So this is what Sabbath is. This is why we actually need this ancient human practice. And then I just want to encourage you just in some practical ways that you could observe Sabbath. So you as an individual, member of your family, maybe you live with roommates, right? Seek the Spirit together. Begin with this question, where do I need rest? Where do I need rest? And then begin to take small steps of sanctifying time, setting time aside to actually observe rest, the kind of rest that we've been talking about. Don't try to do everything at once. People read these Sabbath books and then they're like, no electricity, no cooking, no doing anything. We light a candle, that's it. And you know what you end up doing? You're just a big bummer to everybody. Everybody hates you. Sorry, you did it to yourself, right? Take small steps, move together, and in time, right? Just continue to sanctify more time to spend with one another to enjoy these things. Sabbath observance, I think this is a great way to think about it. It's about ceasing from our normal labors, but we have to be careful that it doesn't become a day that kills joy, right? And for some of you, like if you work with your mind, you rest with your hands. That's just a way that some of us rest. Like, right, you want to get in the garden, you want to get your hands dirty. And for you, that's not work. You're one of those interesting people that like likes manual labor to rest. Go for it. You're enjoying the garden. Do it with the presence of the Lord. Bring your family along with you. But if you work with your hands, those people like to rest with their minds. They'll do reading. They'll study things. They'll just kind of, you know, do those types of things. So depending on who you are, again, ceasing from normal labor, but don't kill joy. Think Marie Kondo Sabbath, right? What sparks joy? Do that thing. So the idea, this comes from Wayne Mueller again, says, by saying no to some things, deep permission arises for other things to happen. When we cease our daily labor, other things, love, friendship, prayer, touching, singing, rest can be born in the space created by our rest. Walking with a friend, reciting a prayer, caring for children, sharing bread and wine with family, friends, and neighbors. I have this experience a lot with my kids. I'm actually kind of a hyperactive person. If you've ever met my mother, it makes perfect sense. We're both hyperactive. And so we kind of busy ourselves, like nervous energy, doing things. And it's really interesting because I know I'm doing things right when I'll sit down on the couch and Hudson will come over and he'll just sit down next to me and just like slump, like right into my body. And it's like, okay, I'm creating space just to be with my children. This is the right thing to do. The toilets, I'll clean them later, right? Or like I'll organize that thing later. And so we're saying no to these things and we give permission to the space where these types of things can happen. We can connect with other human beings. We can enjoy the discipleship, the apprenticeship that we've been practicing, that we've been working on every single day of the week with our children. We can just simply enjoy our children and be with them. These are the ideas and the principles of Sabbath. What will bring refreshment? What will bring joy, gratitude, or what stirs up worship? For some of you, go to the beach. Don't bring your surfboard necessarily, like if that's a bummer for the rest of your family. Just go walk on the beach. Just take it in. Go to the places that invoke worship, that invoke gratitude, right? Those are the types of ways that we can observe Sabbath. So in closing, these are the four principles in observing Sabbath. It's not a law, it's a gift. It's a gift. And it's a gift for you as an individual to steward, if you're part of a family, for you and your family to steward together. But these are the four things that I hope that we as a community can cultivate and practice together. Number one is that we would take time captive. What I mean by that is that we would cease from our normal day-to-day routine, that we would make time special, sacred, unique. Observe and practice unhurried rest. Number two, in that, remember who you are. You are created by God. You are made in His image. You are created for His love and His friendship. You are saved by grace, a sheer act of God's mercy, and you are loved supremely. Revel in that. Marinate in it. Speak it over yourself. Speak it over your children. And take a whole day to do it. Number three, enjoy what you have. You know, all of us have so much. We have excess, don't we? And so this is a day to just be content, to be thankful, to rest and revel in God's provision with our friends and our family, to celebrate that life together. Enjoy the work of your hands. Don't work for more. Don't go buy more. Just enjoy what you have. Lastly, seek the presence of God, the Lord of the Sabbath. By cultivating unhurried intimacy with Jesus, with the Father, through the Holy Spirit. Just reveling in, I'm a child of God. He is pleased with me, and He goes with you in your work, but also He rests with you in your rest. If we observe these things, we will find and practice that rest that Jesus offers us, rest for our souls.